This is a mixtape special presentation.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Who has a mixtape? Who needs a mixtape? Who makes a mixtape? Who needs a mixtape? You do, do.
Waka 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 waka. Don't you wanna listen to our mixtape? Sing along and clap to the beat. Settle in and listen to our mixtape. Another music vanishes. Enjoy your buttock sandwiches.
So I want to kind of introduce you a little bit and introduce some of your other work as well, so that the folks at home kind of know who you are and what you do. I'm actually here with investigative journalist and best-selling author, which is really cool, Ben Westhoff. Ben has written a number of books, including Little Brother, Fentanyl Inc., and of course, Original Gangstas, which is why we asked you on the show here today. You also do a newsletter, which is it sounds interesting because it's drugs plus hip hop, but for different reasons, not for what people are probably thinking. You actually discuss both of those topics kind of on their own, correct?
Yeah, I have this book about drugs, about fentanyl, and then also I've written a couple books about hip-hop, one about the West Coast, Original Gangstas, and the other one about Southern hip-hop. It's called Dirty South.
And if you guys are interested, you can find that newsletter and information about all his books over on his website, which is just your name, correct? It's benwesthoff.com.
Yep.
And I will put links to that so everybody can find that nice and easy. So Original Gangstas has become a sort of go-to as far as an in-depth look into the West Coast and the rap rivalry and everything. I know, kind of doing some research on you and on the book, we had S. Lee Savage, who wrote the documentary Welcome to Death Row, also worked as a writer on Straight Outta Compton, amongst some other projects. And he said that this is the best book ever written about hip-hop. And I know you dive pretty deep into this on this one. You didn't just get the stories from the rappers, like their interviews and stuff, but you actually got the stories from their friends and their family as well, correct?
Yeah, yep. I interviewed Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, Ice-T, you know, Warren G, all these people who are at the center of everything, even Jerry Heller.
Wow, that's pretty insane. I mean, so many of us who grew up in that time frame and kind of remember the stories, to us it's just stories, and we get that kind of secondhand account, but you got right in there. You actually got to speak to the people that were around and involved in some of this stuff, so that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I got to go to Compton. I went to Easy's house, actually.
Wow.
You know, this was after he died, but I met his mom and his son, and just seeing where it all went down was pretty cool.
So what was the overall experience like getting to meet these people and like things that a lot of us had only heard of or seen in movies or pictures? Like, you stood there and you talked to those people. What was that like for you?
Something that was really interesting to me was just NWA, you know, when I was in junior high when they came out, and you know, it seemed like such a scary group, and the stuff they're talking about, all this like guns and violence, and but in person they're really like almost wallflowers, you know. They're really like Dr. Dre has like social anxiety, you know, and Ice Cube is like the nicest person you'll ever meet in your life, and MC Ren too. I talked with him at the Hard Rock Cafe in Palm Springs, where he lives now, and like, you know, it's just these are just guys you could have a beer with, and it would just be totally relaxing. You know, it's so funny to think about. Snoop Dogg I met when he was promoting this line of new Swedish socks. You know, so he had designed these pairs of socks. He was like sitting on this throne, smoking a blunt, modeling these socks, and you know, just completely outside of the sort of gangbanging Long Beach side of him that, you know, he came out on. So
I think you get that persona, which obviously if you're going to portray a certain kind of character to sell your music or to sell yourself as that type of musician, you know, they're gonna show that persona a lot. But people need to remember they're also human beings who have an everyday life, who, you know, get up in the morning and do some kind of job and eat dinner just like the rest of us. So it's pretty interesting that you got to experience that. Snoop seems like he would be a great dude to talk to just in general.
Yeah, I mean, I forget who said this. I think it's someone from Onyx, maybe, but it's like, you know, he's like, we're not really gangsters. You know, if we were gangsters, we would be out like doing crimes. But these are guys who are like incredible performers and entertainers. And that's how they got famous, not because they were like really heavy in the streets. And, you know, there's this thing about rap fans that like they expect these entertainers to have really done the stuff they talk about. And, but for me, it's like, no, I want someone who would like I'm a journalist. I want someone who has like journalist skills to bring these street realities to life and to make it sound great, you know? And, that's what these guys were really doing.
So as you were, you know, as you're writing the book, like I said, I've spent a probably about a month researching the topic of the East Coast, West Coast rivalry and trying to break free from the things I remember versus the things that really happened. And there's a lot. There's a lot to weed through. There are so many secondhand accounts, and one person will say one thing, and you get a slightly different version from someone else. Did you find it difficult to, like, get to the truth of some of this stuff? Like, or were people really open to talk about it, and did you find, like, common threads?
No, I think, you know, there's a lot of threads to weave through. But I think there is a truth that's out there that most people agree on. You know, when it comes to even like Tupac's murder, still not solved, you know, Biggie's murder is still not solved. But there is like really a kind of consensus at this point about, you know, who killed them more or less. When it comes to the buildup to the East Coast, West Coast, what was so interesting to me is that I always thought it was kind of like really a battle between these two sides, you know, but really it wasn't. Really, it was like Tupac, you know what I mean? Like Tupac initiated the East Coast, West Coast rivalry, and it wasn't the full East Coast. It wasn't the full West Coast. It was basically Bad Boy versus Death Row. There were some like splinter, you know, beefs that were unrelated. And it wasn't like Biggie and Puffy were really wanted any part of this, you know, especially Biggie. He just wanted it all to be over. He did kind of shoot back a little bit when Tupac started going after him, but really he only did that, you could tell, because he felt like he had to, you know, and they were very kind of veiled diss songs. And it was just like Tupac had this bee in his bonnet, you know, and it seems likely that Tupac was off base, you know. And then the other big misconception, I think, is that Suge Knight was sort of the guy driving this, you know, and Suge Knight has certainly done a lot of terrible things and, you know, messed with a lot of people. But he didn't get Tupac into this. Tupac got him into this. And Suge Knight, really, he and Puffy kind of got along, you know, for a while. They had some problems, but it was really when Suge signed Tupac that Tupac roped him into this battle with Bad Boy, and Suge almost saw it as like his obligation, because Tupac was his artist. He was going to ride with him. And but then once it got going, you know, Tupac tried to get people like Snoop involved. Snoop was like, no, thank you. Dre was like, no, thank you. Lady of Rage didn't want to get into it. I mean, really, Tupac was mostly waging this war by himself.
Yeah, it's funny because you say that, and it, again, I've dove deeper into this in the last month and a half than I, you know, ever had looked into it. It was one of those things where you just sort of remember it. And I kind of came to this very similar realization. So when you said that, it kind of hit home, because I keep telling the guys we haven't even done the show yet. And I'm like, I don't think it's what people think it was. Like, I think it started off as a couple of little diss tracks, and which is probably where it would have stayed. But I feel like there were a couple of players, maybe three, that were kind of pushing it. And some of them, like Little C's, I think he just said stuff. But I don't think it was ever... If you notice the way it started versus how it got later, like all these names started dropping off because I think they were stepping back going, whoa, this isn't what we thought. You know, we were just diss tracking each other, which has been going on forever. And when people started taking it to up a level, I think a lot of people wanted to back out. And it's weird that you said what you said, because I felt that. Like, I don't think it's – we always talked about the East Coast-West Coast rivalry, but is it really – was it really a rivalry between the East and West Coast, or was it just a couple of people? And that's kind of what I felt like.
It's like, it's not like anyone in Seattle, you know, cared about this right. or anything like that. You know, it was, you know, just in case people aren't touched up on how it all got going. It basically got going when Tupac was in prison. You know, first of all, just, you know, most people know this, but Tupac is very East Coast. I mean, he was like born in New York, raised in New York. He went to school in Baltimore. He didn't even come out to the West Coast until he was in his late teenage years. And so he went to prison, and he was in upstate New York. And right before that, he was shot when he was at this recording studio in New York City. And so the investigator that I talked to doesn't even think Tupac was shot. He, you know, non-fatally that first time at Quad Recording Studios in New York City. He thinks Tupac accidentally shot himself.
Really?
Because he had this gun that went off in his pocket. And so then after he was shot, whether it was by himself or whether it was by these guys who accosted him in the studio, he went upstairs. He took the elevator up to where Biggie and Puffy were recording. You know, he'd come because one of their affiliates, he was going to be on his track or something like that. But he says when he arrived to the studio in the elevator, they just kind of looked at him. They didn't try to help him. They didn't show love for him. So basically, he got in his mind that either they knew he was going to be shot, that they set him up, or at the very least, they knew it was coming and didn't say anything to him, you know, because it's like these guys who accosted him were wearing camouflage fatigues, which I guess was like a big Brooklyn fashion during that era. You know, they were in Manhattan at the time, but he was like, well, these guys are obviously from Brooklyn. You know, Biggie's from Brooklyn. You know, he had to have known, you know, I mean, first of all, Brooklyn is the size of like Chicago. You know what I mean? It has like millions of people there.
Right.
Like Biggie didn't know every person in Brooklyn, you know, first of all. And even if he did, you know, even if Biggie did sort of know something was coming, it was likely orchestrated by this gangster, you know, and like that Biggie knew. And if Biggie said anything to Tupac, he might have been, you know, shot himself or something. You know, Biggie might have just been like completely fearful for his own life. Right. Who knows? But to me, there's very little reason to think that Biggie had anything to do with it, or even that he had any ill will against Tupac at all. You know, to me, most likely, if he knew something was happening, he would have told Tupac. You know, that's just speculation. But so, you know, like I was saying, the whole East Coast, West Coast thing seemed to get off on this kind of just like mistake by Tupac.
Yeah. And like I said, I was a teenager through a lot of this. And I remember you would hear stories like, Biggie's people, Puffy's people, they shot Tupac. And then you hear, you know, oh, well, somebody had Tupac shot and somebody had Biggie shot. And you just start putting stuff together, and you know, the media at the time, the news outlets and stuff, they were running with this stuff because why not? I mean, it sounds good, right? But like you said, as you actually read about it and do some deeper digging, you're like, well, that's not exactly what happened. Like there's a little more to the story. And you know, I think people forget Tupac was already involved with some people maybe he shouldn't have been involved with. I know there were a lot of things going on with the sexual assault case, and he had named some names, and people weren't exactly happy with him at that point anyway. And they're really, I don't know, like you said, I don't feel like there was a feud between the two sides so much. I mean, from all accounts, at one time, Biggie and Tupac were friends, were actually close at one time. So it would seem odd to me, but, you know, it's what we heard.
Yeah, that's the other point that I think gets lost a lot, is that Tupac was kind of like Biggie's mentor.
Yeah.
And Tupac was famous first. You know, he already had like two hit albums. He was a movie star. And Biggie was really not known at all outside of New York. And so, you know, but Tupac was really impressed by him. And he had him at his shows. And he kind of like taught him how to come up in the industry. And so that, you know, that later after Tupac got shot and he thinks Biggie did it, he's like, I can't believe I gave you, you know, all this mentorship, and this is how you repay me. I thought you were my friend. But really, at one point, Biggie asked Tupac to manage him, you know, according to someone close to Tupac who told me that. But Tupac was basically like, no, stick with Puffy. He'll do you right. But yeah, they were really tight at one point.
It's interesting, too, when you go and take a look at the Soul Awards, where a lot of people think a lot of this actually kind of took off. And you hear, like, through the whole thing, Puff Daddy's trying to calm people down. He's trying to, like, extend an olive branch and tell them, like, I don't know what, all this East-West stuff needs to go away, because we're, you know, I'm proud of everybody out here tonight, including Dre. And I know there was a little bit with Snoop Dogg being in New York, and apparently the dog pound they got shot at. But again, you know, who did it? No one knows. And, you know, it's announced that you're out there. God only knows who's mad at you at this point, because you might have just guys on the street trying to prove themselves, you know, so who knows?
Yeah, I wrote on my Substack, Drugs Plus Hip Hop, that about Suge Knight's new podcast, where he's in prison right now, but he calls in and talks with Dave Mays, who's the founder of The Source magazine. I think you were talking about the Source Awards.
Yeah, I think I said Soul. Yeah. I meant Source Awards, yes.
But Suge has this, like, you know, they were like, what do you think about, there was someone who was arrested in the Tupac murder recently, and, you know, this guy called Keefe D.
Yeah, Dwayne Davis, Keefe D.
Yeah, and Dave Mays was asking him about Keefe D, and Suge like had almost like nothing to say about that, but he's like, I do think though that Snoop Dogg's role in all this is really suspicious, and he went on to almost accuse Snoop Dogg of having something to do with Tupac's murder. I mean, you know, their relationship was definitely strained. Like, after Tupac got out of prison, he came to L.A. Snoop was on trial for a murder charge himself that he eventually got off. But, like, they made that song together, Two of America's Most Wanted. And, you know, but like I said earlier, Snoop did not want to go along with this riding against the East Coast.
Right.
Despite the fact of what you were just saying, that when he was in New York, he's in Red Hook, Brooklyn, I believe, they were shot at during this filming of the video. And so he, in the New York Dog Pound video, they made it so like Snoop and them are stomping on these skyscrapers in New York. It came across as a diss track of New York, even though when it was originally written, it wasn't even a diss track, but the video
right.
comes across as a diss track. But you know, Snoop like abandoned all that very quickly. And then famously, after Tupac and Biggie were killed, Snoop appeared with Puffy on Steve Harvey's sitcom. And they like reconciled. They said, we're putting this East Coast, West Coast stuff to bed. But, you know, Suge said that's very convenient that he's so tight with Puffy, who some people think had something to do with Tupac's murder. And, you know, Suge and Snoop have this, like, really terrible relationship for a long time now.
So I'll ask you, just you kind of mentioned Keefe D, Dwayne Davis, and, you know, you've looked into this whole thing pretty deep. You've written a book about it. You've talked to the people. In light of everything, all the news that's come out with the whole Dwayne Davis thing, I'll kind of ask your opinion. Do you, on a personal level, do you feel that Tupac's death had anything to do with this, or do you think this was more of a gang retaliation thing, a gang-related thing? And the same with Biggie.
I definitely think that Tupac was killed by, you know, these Compton Crips who had come down to Las Vegas and were in this car, you know, that pulled up next to the car that Tupac was in with Suge at the stoplight. And this was, you know, earlier that night after the Mike Tyson fight, Tupac's crew, Tupac had run into this guy from Compton named Orlando Anderson.
Right.
And, you know, Tupac was kind of riding with the Bloods, you know, like Suge was, his crew was mostly Bloods. And Orlando Anderson was a Compton Crip. And so, I don't know, you know, they got in this beef and then they started beating on Orlando Anderson right there at the MGM Grand. It was all caught on videotape.
Right.
And then, you know, the what I call the Occam's razor theory, you know, the most likely theory is that Orlando Anderson got his crew, his fellow Compton Crips, and they came back and they killed, you know, they fatally shot Tupac. Now, I'm not positive it was Orlando Anderson himself. You know, that's, I think most people think it was Orlando Anderson who pulled the trigger, in part because this guy they just arrested in Tupac's murder, Keefe D, says that. And so Keefe D is Orlando Anderson's uncle.
Right.
And the only thing that's like really convenient about that, though, is because Orlando Anderson is dead.
He's dead, right.
You know, so it's like you can blame it on a dead guy, no worries. But at the time, you know, like when he was first asked about this, at first Keefe D like denied he was in the car. He denied his crew had anything to do with it. So his story has evolved. He was pinched by this detective named Greg Kading, who's written a good, really good book about these murders called Murder Rap. And he was set up, Keefe D was set up with like a barrel full of PCP or something. And so to plea bargain, he admitted to, you know, being involved with Tupac's murder. So he has like a, and he also blamed Puffy and said that like, Puffy had offered his crew $1 million to kill Tupac and Biggie.
Right.
Or to kill Tupac and Suge, even though he never paid up. But so, you know, Keefe D has had a lot of reason to lie. Still, like I said, it's the Occam's razor theory. They were there. They were mad. So I'm like certain it was someone in that car. I'm just not certain that it was Orlando Anderson.
Right. It's kind of how I feel too. It's one of those things. I mean, we may never get the full truth behind it. Either of their deaths, you know, we may never know. But again, when you start reading and you start looking into the actual stories, it starts looking a lot more like it was just gang related stuff. These guys ran around with people at times that I guess you probably, you know, you're taking a chance if you do that. So, I want to, again, thank you. I don't want to keep too long. I know you're on a schedule, but if you want to take a few minutes, kind of let people know about a couple of your other books. And again, I want to highlight that he has a newsletter on his website. You guys should go over and check that out as well. But why don't you take a minute, let the folks at home know where they can find, where they can buy your books, where they can find more information about you.
Yeah, my website, BenWestoff.com, BenWestoff.com. My most recent book is called Little Brother. It's about my mentee in the Big Brothers Big Sisters program. His name was Jarrell Cleveland, and he was murdered a few years ago after we'd been together for 11 years. He was 19 when he was murdered, and he was murdered in Ferguson, Missouri, you know, where Michael Brown was killed and the genesis of the Black Lives Matter movement. But Jarrell's killing was not solved. The police never prosecuted anyone. And so I used my skills as an investigative reporter to find out who killed him.
Oh, that's amazing.
This, it was like a three-year odyssey of figuring this out. So that book is called Little Brother. Probably best-known book is called Fentanyl, Inc., and it's about the fentanyl epidemic and how the roots of that. And for that, I went undercover in some drug labs in China. Wow. to see fentanyl labs, the first journalist to do that, to uncover these companies that, you know, had like hundreds and hundreds of employees selling fentanyl products right there on the internet, and the Chinese government was like subsidizing them, and it's this whole crazy story.
Well, again, that's wow. Kind of blowing my mind. I want to encourage everyone to go check out his stuff. The praise on I have not read Fentanyl Inc. I'll be honest, I didn't even know about it until I was researching you, and I was like, and same with Little Brother. I mean, they both sound amazing, and the praise that I've read for them thus far and has been wonderful. So I encourage everyone to go check it out. Ben, we really thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with us today. Yeah, if there's anything we can do for you, let us know. We will gladly post links and on our social media and let everyone know where they can find you.
All right, very cool. Well, thanks, Jason. It was great to talk to you.
You too.
There are times that you feel like your head is a big old bucket filled with fuzzy dreams, 'cause you wish you were a Muppet, but you can't play the music and you can't light the lights, and it's all you can do just to make it through any more of these lonely nights. So you grab your favorite mixtape and you pop it in the slot, and you scream two words along with all the nerds, 'cause right now it's all you've got. Stay cool.